Good morning and welcome to Smashy Business. I'm Lubna Hamdan.
And I'm Richard Fitzgerald.
And we're still here. We haven't been cancelled just yet.
No. Is that a goal in life, Lubna?
Right, we'll go through the headlines and then I have I have so many questions for you. But a Dubai F&B boss is facing boycott threats after sharing a Zionist post on Instagram. And then the UAE is eyeing Egypt as its overall overseas investments have topped $2.5 trillion. A good chunk of that has gone to Egypt. And then DeepMind's co-founder is facing backlash as he announced on X that he's going to be Microsoft's CEO of its new AI division.
Oh, wow.
So interesting stuff today.
Yeah.
How's it going? Yesterday we had Waleed Shihabi as a co-host.
Yeah.
And I asked him what Ramadan is like this year, because I feel like Ramadan is really different this year. Usually it's quiet. He said it's usually quieter than August, the month of Ramadan.
Mm.
And he, you know, he's Muslim. He's fasting. He said, funny enough, his son has shamed him into fasting again.
Yeah.
How is it for you, though?
Yeah, I think I had listened to your conversation, and I think, you know, it's just, on one level, like, we scale back. It's just like saying, what's Q4 like? Is the year busy? What's the economic thing? Because everyone has differing anecdotes. Is summer busy? Is Dubai changing? I think, you know, my introduction to the region, first of all, I grew up in Ireland, and when I went away to school, of 400 boys in a boarding school, there was one guy who was from Egypt, and he wasn't treated well. Like, I'm ashamed of how Irish people, how ignorant they are to different cultures. And, you know, in the winter, obviously, it would get darker sooner, so he could eat at 6 or 7, but, like, even halal food and the queue and what we would call the cafeteria or whatever, like, he just wasn't treated well. So then if I come to this region, then what's my view of Ramadan? And what I was exposed to in Dubai in 2012 in Business Central Towers was curtains everywhere over Batil, over everything.
Exactly.
And I would come back from Al Kudra at the weekend and I could not, Lubna, find a cafe open. Not even covered. I could not have breakfast. In 2012, I couldn't have breakfast. But at the same time, I would travel to Lebanon, or I would go to other places, and you would go, hang on a second, they just allow some people to fast, other people not to. There's no rules in the street. You're not going to get thrown in jail for having a cigarette or having water at the traffic lights.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot of like, oh, Dubai is changing. And then there's other things like, well, actually, there are cities around the world that aren't as, say, ignorant as Dublin at the time. Sorry, Dublin, Irish people. And aren't as strict as Saudi or Kuwait or Dubai, right, or UAE. But there are places where Muslims fast and they just do it within their communities in the US or in other places, and it's totally normal. And we don't really discuss everything. We just kind of let it go, and no one judges you saying that you're being rude because you're having food in front of. But so I don't want to talk too much about it, but what I want to answer the question. I love Ramadan now because, well, first of all, I like Ramadan, all factors of it. I like the good-natured vibes to it.
The gatherings, the, and
yeah,
the community.
And, yeah, and just the general sense that people are actually, like, spending that time of the year for a month to go slower, to reflect, to be about others, to not be rat racing and whatever. Not right words, but you know what I mean. And like, there's obviously a spiritual side of it. And I shouldn't comment too much, but like, but what I like about it this year in particular, a couple of like specific things is the weather. So since 2012, Ramadan was in kind of July. It's the first time that we have iftars outdoor in the gardens and stuff. Secondly, you know, since the pandemic, we're kind of back to normal in Dubai. We have Asatir tents, and we had it the last couple of years, but we have everything back, and that's Arabian hospitality. It's all the nice Ramadan vibes and obviously the gatherings, but you have it at a level of it being really nice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I had a really nice iftar in my building downstairs, a new kind of meat place opened, an Egyptian one, and they just made such a nice vibe around with fairy lights and with all the food around it. It's just such a nice little vibe. But I went to two events last night. One, Sahur for Bike Plus, which is the third division of Bike Dance.
Yeah.
Outside whatever they do on Bike Dance and TikTok.
And what was the event like? Was it an iftar? Was it, because there are so many events still happening, right? Which is interesting to see. It's not just the iftars and the sahurs. Like, Dubai is just, you know,
Yeah.
Full of these events, and it's still ongoing. Businesses as usual. Yeah. You know, restaurants aside and everything, it's businesses, it's really been busy, hasn't it?
Yeah, like I didn't celebrate St. Patrick's Day, but I went on the Instagram stories, the McGettigans, and like you guys, you and Waleed were talking yesterday about music and stuff. It was a full-on party on Saturday or Sunday, the 17th, from midday with green jerseys and whatever. There was music, there was famous old Irish boy band people singing, right? Like, that was a little micro vibe, like, but no one would know that that was Ramadan. I think that's how the city's evolving. It's not disrespectful, it's just in a little corner somewhere.
Sure, sure, and,
But to the point, I don't think events are happening. I think Ramadan-themed business events are happening. And this is what last night was, right? BikePlus want to sell us software, so they invite me to an iftar, and it's a business meeting, it's a lunch, it's a dinner. Mm. And then in that meeting, someone else from TikTok is there, and we discuss what opportunities are for publishers. And I'm kind of like, that was really productive. It was in a beautiful garden in Mina Sahai, the Western Mina Sahai. It was really nice iftar, really nice food. There was about 50, 60 people there, but it was a business lunch dinner.
Right.
Very much so.
Right.
And then after that, I went to a private villa in Emirates Hills, hosted by the lady who owns and who set up Apparel Group. Mm-hmm. And one of their many, many brands that they represent across the region. They're a fascinating, successful story. From Tim Hortons, Tommy Hilfiger, to Adidas in Saudi, to Aldo, to many, many brands. And they hosted one, Dune London, with the CEO of Dune London over there, in this like unbelievably plush residence.
Right.
And they had Dima Al Saudi, who did a collaboration for this fashion brand.
She's an influencer, for those who don't know who she is, yeah.
Yeah, and this is, so basically it was quite an intimate gathering. It was very Ramadan. Everyone who went there made an effort to wear Ramadan attire, and it was just really nice, but it was promotional activity for a fashion label and a collab.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, it's just, it's interesting because you said the first one was productive. The second one, was it productive? Was it, you know, what?
Business-wise?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a 10-15-minute conversation with the CEO of a global fashion brand out of London that I wouldn't have had otherwise.
Right.
The lady behind Mum's World was there.
Okay.
Like, Seema, you know.
Seema Ved, yeah, sure.
So she was entertaining her friends, but also her business acquaintances. Mm. And I spoke to the CMO of Apparel Group who said, yeah, we do these. And I said, is your life easier because it's in a residence and you bring catering in to do the events? She's like, no, because I have to do it in the mall as well. Like last week they did one for Aldo with Miriam Farris in the mall, and they did one in the villa as well. So it's kind of double the work.
You know what? I love that, you know, there are entrepreneurs, businesswomen, and serious businesswomen, and not just, you know, startup owners. No, this is not a dig at startup owners, but, you know, someone major like the Apparel Group and Seema Ved. And then you also have the influencers and the younger crowd and the, you know, it's a nice mix when you get the kind of old school, you know, icons with the newer.
That's you weren't even there, Lubna, and you've described it perfectly. That's what it was. There was like a 21-year-old.
Maybe I was, Maybe I was.
Yeah, maybe
I am a professional stalker.
I
know,
I kind of leave early. You're probably there all night. Yeah.
No, I wish I was though. But right, shall we talk about the first story, which is making waves on social media right now? A Dubai F&B boss, she's the co-founder of Comptoir 102, which is a concept store and healthy restaurant, and vegan cafe Wild in the Moon. I feel like that's where you would be seen. You wouldn't be caught dead in McGettigan's, but you would be seen in Wild in the Moon and Comptoir 102 because they're really healthy, that's why.
Yeah, I don't frequent them often. I actually was in Wild in the Moon, the one in the Boulevard, on Sunday or Monday night, and I had one of their matches, and it was really good.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if you're going to go back there after the story, but
it's like a lot of people are, judging by the comments. Yeah.
Yeah. So the co-founder, Emma Sauko, posted pro-Israeli stories on her Instagram page. They weren't just pro-Israeli. They were actually, you know, anti-Arab, anti-Muslim, you know, a typical propaganda video. There was an Israeli Muslim Arab who says in the video, Israel gave me everything. It's a beautiful and strong multi-ethnic democracy. The Arabs in Israel receive equal rights, and Israel protects women. So some of the comments under the post said, obviously, she didn't learn anything from Starbucks, McDonald's. People are calling to shut down her business. People are tagging Al Serkal, because one of the branches is in Al Serkal. But the most interesting comment is someone said, why didn't she open a restaurant in Tel Aviv instead? And someone else replied, because they see us as cash cows, decades in Arabia, and they still see themselves as superior.
Where's she from?
She's French.
Okay. So I saw this one, and there was obviously one last week in with a Luna Cafe restaurant.
In Bahrain, yes.
And, you know, so what's happening here? For the 164 days or so, there's been boycotts on about multinational groups, the large FMCGs, the chains.
Yeah.
And now it's happening. Maybe it happened already, but now it's kind of happening at a more like grassroots level, cafes and individuals, both in Bahrain and in Dubai now, right? And it's and what are the trigger points? Likes and comments of social media, like endorsements. So if you think back to late last year, the opposite was happening. If tech founders sort of said they were, you know, against the genocide, then they would be cancelled. So now restaurant owners and business people in other cities here, the flip reverse is happening. So look, I think I think this is a tricky one, because I know how you framed the video, but I kind of watched that video as well, and I think that video could be interpreted in a different way.
Did you watch the full video though? Because the full video
maybe
is
like
90
seconds.
9 minutes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because the video goes on and on about how, you know, this woman's uncle, because she wanted to go into modeling, this woman's uncle threatened to behead her, and a lot of anti-Muslim kind of propaganda.
Fair. So we discussed this morning with the editorial team in Love in Dubai, where we cover this in Love in Dubai, and the statement that the lady, same in Bahrain, and this is why I think this is great, both individuals made a statement.
An now apology, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, correct me on the wording. But so they both recognized what was happening. Now, you might say, well, obviously they're going to, but the international brands stayed quiet, right? Mm. So we were talking about this, lovely, you and I, and saying, can they just please put out something to acknowledge the fact about what's happening? And now, at a grassroots state, when their livelihood is under threat, right? Their business is about to be boycotted and whatever, they are making a video, they're coming out, they're putting a face on it and they're coming out. And in that statement or apology that she said, she kind of said something like, hey, I'm looking for any saving grace here or whatever, right?
Right. Yeah, I mean, you know, we can read out the apology for people, actually, just so they... You know, I think her apology was different to the Bahraini, to the chef in Bahrain. The chef in Bahrain did not actually... did not say, you know, I call for a ceasefire, whereas Emma did actually say that. I'm going to read her apology, and then we can discuss it before we move on to the next story. She said, I am sorry for the post I reshared. I was standing by the fact that we must find a way towards peace, and this is the only message I have been meaning to convey. I am deeply shaken by the loss of innocent Palestinian lives, and as the conflict extends over time, as the situation gets duressed by the day, as the anguish grows, I also feel our hearts harden, and I feel we are losing the ability to communicate and find the ways towards peace and dialogue. It's, you know, hashtag standing against genocide, hashtag ceasefire now. It just, you know, it's not enough, though, is it? It's just...
So what can we discuss here? Because, Lubna, we could discuss what she's suggesting. We could discuss lots of things, and we could give our views about what the future of the political and the famine genocide, like what situation.
Yeah.
Or we can discuss the business sense of, you know, what's going on here. Like, should she have posted something on social media? Should people have reacted in this way? Should she have apologized? What should happen next? Right? And I think it's a recurring theme of, like, do people deserve to lose their jobs or not? You know, is cancelling the social justice, like, for example, should Comptoir 102 and Wild of the Moon go out of business because of something that she didn't say, that another individual said, right? Do you think... Because that's what the comments are.
Like, I think she should leave the brand. I think she should distance herself from the brand. Because I'll tell you something. If you want peace and you shared that video and you watched the entire video, you would know that the video was even shared on a Zionist Instagram page, right? They do these propaganda videos. It was very clear and very obvious, right? Like, people are not stupid. People are not ignorant.
So you think there needs to be some sort of...
pay the price.
There needs to be some sort of...
Absolutely. Okay. Pay the price, because an apology on social media is just not going to cut it. And this is not even my personal opinion. This is what people, you know, the scenes coming out of Gaza are, you know, people are losing their minds over, there is a genocide. This is not a conflict. Our hearts are not hardening because we don't want peace, you know? The Palestinians have called from their sides for a ceasefire, right?
So yeah, but again, like, bringing it back to, like...
Business, sure.
Just bringing it back to business, but bringing it back to the kind of essence of this particular incident in Dubai. And, you know, for a long time, you and I discussed, and other people did, that people who run businesses and owners should be able to speak, right? And we say that people don't stand up and they don't have a voice. Now, if I look at that, and I'm a crisis management and a PR, right? I would say never, ever, ever share anything ever, because look what might happen. Now, whether her feelings are the way they are, you describe them, and I'm not counting that or not, and even if they're not and you share anyway, like sometimes, like on my social media, sometimes I put something up and I'm kind of like, that could backfire. And I'm going to let my company do the talking instead, you know?
Yeah.
But there's a point there of like...
It's a fine line.
I prefer people who... my point is, I prefer people who speak as leaders. I prefer people who are able to tackle something head on than people who hide behind structure, and people who, yes people, right? In companies and everything. I'm not talking about activism and fighting up against things for the sake of it. No, I don't like that. But I just like people to have a voice and to recognize the world that we live in and the responsibility. It's like a footballer, right? Like a footballer on the pitch taking a knee. I'm with those people.
Sure.
Right?
Sure.
Like, rather than hiding behind the money and hiding, like, if you're a public figure, have a view, you know? Or know that your view should be responsible, but don't... Yeah,
the thing is, you know, she shared that view without, like, let's be honest, right? Businesses here that are owned by, I don't want to say Westerners, but, you know, I also do want to say that at the same time, because let's be honest, like, they don't hold the same accountability as other nationalities. Like, let's be honest, even in the workplace, you know, some nationalities get paid more than other nationalities, etc. Now there is a shift. Now people are saying, actually, you should be held accountable for your view, because, you know, it's like Fadi Ghandour said, right? Like, the West cannot now give anyone a lecture about what is good, what is bad, or democracy in general, right? Mm-hmm. You see that. It's just interesting to point this out, because socially and business-wise, there really is a shift that, no, actually, you now need to be held accountable. And no, actually, we don't want to watch your movies and your songs. And, you know, people are boycotting singers. Some of my friends, you know, if we're on whatever, we want to watch a movie, they're like, actually, no, I'm not going to watch this movie because this actor said 1, 2, 3. So, I don't know.
Yeah,
we can talk about this for ages. But.
Yeah, but I think you're right. And I think let's, I don't know what order we have the stories, but let's, are we doing the dollar one? Are we doing the dollar story?
We're not, but we can.
Well, stick to the plan. But I stick to whatever you had planned. But I'll just kind of finish the point. Like, I think, you know, the value of the dollar, like I saw a photo on social media.
The dollar burning, yeah.
Yesterday of Anthony Blinken with MBS in Saudi.
Okay.
And it was on Princess Rima Bandar Al Saud's social media page. And all the comments underneath were the Saudi flag. And I was just proud, like, as an immigrant, but I was just kind of like, that's a nice setting. Like, this region isn't being bullied anymore.
Exactly.
The dollar is weakening. There's a shift happening, you know? And I think that kind of alludes to your point. So I think, you know, we could discuss the different elements of this. But there is an element of, like, the triggeredness, the cancellation, the social media blowover, and the court of public opinion, versus, you know, what actually happened. And, you know, I think sometimes on social media, some things can be, like we said, I only watch 90 seconds of it, and I have a different view of someone who watches 18 minutes or 9 minutes. And I think that's sort of related to the role of media and trying to be subjective on these things, you know?
Absolutely. And I do think people should educate themselves. And in hindsight, we should have mentioned that the video was, you know, X amount of minutes. It is fast news, so we do try our best. But yeah, I think personally, you know, and someone commented the other day and said, this show is, you know, anti-Western, you know, you're making these comments, etc. You know, this show is not anti-Western. It's not about that. But you know, this region has suffered a lot, you know, from foreign intervention. It has suffered a lot from, you know, certain nationalities getting paid more than other nationalities. It's just, it's, I think, the natural balance of things that this region demands respect. And that's what business leaders are saying. We want respect. Even if you take our money, you need to reinvest it back. Don't just take our money and go reinvest, you know, invest it somewhere else. I'm getting passionate about this. But
what if you get a comment on this episode, on any of the podcasts, Spotify, Angabi, or wherever you're watching this, or on our YouTube page? What if you get a comment that we just did a 15-minute or 10-minute anti-Semitic segment? What would you say to that?
I would say, how can I be anti-Semitic if I'm a Semite, which a lot of people don't even know this, right? How can I be that? Does it make any sense?
Cool.
Right? Like, what, respond to that? Like,
I won't. I don't even think we are, but I'm just saying, like, that you can frame things in different ways. And going back to the point about, like, you know, the subject matter is in the eye of the beholder. Like, you can have different views and different things on what you hear and what you see.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, absolutely. Right, let's move on. It's getting heated here, and the lights in the studio are not helping, but I always found the UAE's and Qatar's and Saudi's investments in Egypt really interesting. You know, Sheikha Moza owns the Four Seasons in Cairo. The UAE is really focusing on Egypt as well. It's just interesting to see Ahmad have a lot of projects there as well. So the UAE's overseas investments topped $2.5 trillion as early as 2024 this year. A big chunk of that, $35 billion, was their investment in Ras Al Hikma in Egypt. There are around 2,000 Emirati companies in Egypt across telcos, real estate, and oil and gas. It's interesting. Did you know this about Egypt?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I think it's fascinating. You know what, though? Because a lot of people criticize how the economy is in Egypt. Like last week we had the third or fourth devaluation in 2 years. Mm. The price of the Egyptian pound to the dollar has risen up, you know, from about 30 officially up to about 60 Egyptian pounds to the dollar now. And there is the cost of living crisis, there's inflation, there's unemployment. But you know, when I see these headlines, I kind of say this is great, because I remember I saw a previous leader in Pakistan signing MOU deals with China and Saudi, and then they were cancelled. Mm. The deals were ripped up, and then there's new leadership. And when I see this sort of stuff, if my leader in my country is signing deals, whether the leadership in this country sign MOUs to increase the power of the passport, or whether people get FDI into a country, it's great. As well as this UAE investment into Egypt, the economist in Dubai for Bloomberg, he put it on his Twitter the other day, the amount of, and he added up all the billions of where it's going, inflowing into Egypt. Look, that's amazing, right? There's an IMF deal, there's a World Bank deal, there's an EU deal. Then there's, so they're all from like state, they're all from like whatever you call these fundy things. Then you have, then you have like the UAE deal, the Ras Al Hikma deal, and then you have like a few others, and you add it up, and it's like 50, 60, 70 billion dollars, right? A year.
Yeah,
and
it's
kind
crazy.
Of like, okay, cool. Because if you look at this, right, when my team in Cairo asked me what's going on and why are we in Egypt and how are we building business, I look at it from an economic situation, and I think Egypt is an economic situation. I think it's a period of austerity, and I think in 4 or 5 years, that economy is going to be growing at 7, 8, 9, 10%.
I agree.
And I think it's an amazing, because it was before the pandemic, before the wheat thing, before the war and all that, like it was flying.
Yeah.
And you know, what's fascinating though is like, you know, Egyptians will talk about this, the landmass, like Saudi, the landmass they have there, the beauty, the sea, the elements, the, and Saudi as well, you know, from the Red Sea, and you talked about the different giga projects yesterday. Like, if some of these things come off, it's amazing.
It's really incredible. I mean, and Egypt was, you know, his, are you okay there? Historically, one of the, you know, most advanced, I see you holding in a cough, Richard, it's okay. One of the most, you know, advanced, not just economies, but culturally, you know, the cinema, the, I remember I was in Cairo sometime last year, and I was talking to a waiter there, and the waiter was dressed to the nines, you know, it was, I think, the Sofitel, and he just started talking to me about, you know, what Egypt used to be like, and it wasn't nostalgia, it was the sadness of the loss of potential of what Egypt could really become. So that's really great. And I'll mention this just for people. The credit rating was upgraded by S&P. And just to mention one of those deals that you talked about as well, on Monday, the World Bank said it's planning on giving Egypt over $6 billion over the next 3 years. And that money is going to go towards government programs and the private sector as well. $3 billion for the private sector.
Amazing. Lubna, these are tangible things. This is real. People will feel this. And it wouldn't happen if there was no trust in the leadership in Egypt. I'm just saying, like, it wouldn't happen. Like, people joke, just like with the Russian elections, there was an Egyptian election recently, and people joked, oh, it's the same thing again. But the World Bank wouldn't be putting this money in if it was as corrupt as everyone says it is. You know why I know?
Absolutely.
Because they're not giving the same money to Lebanon. The IMF deal never happened in Lebanon, and because they don't trust that it's going to be spent in the right way. So if you're really critical of the leadership in Egypt or whatever, then you're actually wrong, because the people who look at where this money is going to go know it's going to go in the right place. Okay, sure, there's probably misspend. There's probably projects or new cities that you don't believe in. But like, if I was looking at building a business, I would, and if I was raising kids, if I was Egyptian, I see a much brighter future for Egypt than I do with Lebanon right now because of the inflow of FDI and different types of investments.
Absolutely. I mean, there was even a report that Lebanon is the world's third most miserable country or something like that. I just saw that yesterday. You know, Abu Dhabi, Abu Dhabi's ADQ has stakes in seven of hotels, Egypt's historic hotels, Cairo, Marriott, Mina House, Sofitel, Mövenpick, etc.
The other nice thing about this is, because you kind of said it at the start about Sheikh Mosa from Qatar and the hotel, is that, you know, sometimes when we see the assets under the portfolios of the sovereign wealth funds and you see that they own half of London or they own Ticketmaster or whatever, I kind of get more excited when they own parts of other countries in this region. Because
definitely,
it's more like cyclical, and it flows within the region, as opposed
and it says
to
something that I believe
investing,
in
investing. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe in investing in this country, and that's beautiful. Unfortunately for Lebanon, it's I don't know what the future is for Lebanon, because it does have so much potential, but it's so incredibly corrupt. So I don't know. Maybe they do need a leader like. I'm not going to say.
Let's move on. Yeah, I knew what you were going to say. Let's keep going.
Okay, DeepMind's co-founder. I think you're going to love this story. He's facing backlash on X, where he also announced, and because he announced, that he's joining Microsoft as the CEO of its new AI division. Just to give people some background, Google DeepMind is the research unit within Google AI. It helped develop and release Gemini, the AI chatbot, and Wired called it the most advanced AI startup in the world. But Mustafa Suleiman, he said on X, and that's the co-founder of DeepMind. He said on X, you know, I'm excited to announce today that I'm joining as CEO of Microsoft AI, et cetera, et cetera. Someone said, don't you have a startup to run that you founded, that you are super excited about, that you left Google for, because big companies move too slowly? This is literally from your book. And he wrote the Coming Wave book, and it looks into the potential and risks of AI in transforming society. That was interesting. The comments were interesting. Someone said, so Microsoft AI will compete with OpenAI, where Microsoft, where MS is the largest investor and shareholder. How does this work?
Well, good questions. It's quite murky. So what's the kind of, what are the issues that people have? Is it that they don't trust what DeepMind was doing and that they don't trust now what Microsoft will do?
No, they don't trust what Microsoft will do. Some people were saying Microsoft is you know, looking to dominate, to, you know, there's talk about a monopoly sort of thing.
Well, we kind of talked about like a Google partnership with Apple the other day, and you know, a lot of what we kind of alluded in that chat, that like, well, we mentioned that Microsoft had done that deal with OpenAI. I think even if Microsoft do a deal with OpenAI, they still need AI leadership. Like, I think when Sam Altman lost his position for a hot weekend as the CEO of OpenAI late last year, which dominated the American media, and he was brought back in, there was rumors that Satya Nadella was going to give him the job as head of AI for Microsoft. So they were going to bring him in to do it. So these companies, like, it's like the UAE having the first AI minister in 2017 in the world. Like, these companies do need to have AI leaders.
Yeah, yeah.
So the fact that Microsoft are having a CEO, and that, to the last question, and they also do a partnership with What Is Software, that's not, you know, that's almost like, like, you kind of need to have someone in that position.
Yeah. I mean, I do agree. I think people's point is, and it goes back to the point we were making about regulation in the previous episode, is that, you know, he was talking about the dangers of these larger companies taking over AI, and the fact that they're moving too slowly. And that's, you know, he was doing the opposite, he claimed, with DeepMind. So he's doing the opposite of what he said he was going to do. But I mean, you know, Elon Musk does that all the time. I think, yeah, it'll pass. It's just interesting to see people's reactions to this. And as you said, you know, isn't it better that he would be at the helm of Microsoft AI to help them move more quickly?
There's definitely a lot of mistrust with, they're scared. There's people who aren't sure about where AI is going.
Yeah.
In terms of like existential or whatever. And then there's also lack of trust of large corporates with any sort of, you know, like there was with social media, so with anything like that. So I think these things are going to keep coming up. But, you know, I think all we can do is educate ourselves. Like, you know, I wasn't aware of that book. I don't know enough about DeepMind to really comment. But
sure.
I think it's, we're going to see more and more. Like, if you're a young person, you're looking for a job, Mark Cuban said recently, like, if you know, you really need to be vested in AI. Part of me, Lubna, is kind of like, AI is just computing. It's just another word. If you replaced, every time you heard AI, if you said digital or computer, like,
yeah,
it's just, it's the same thing. It's just now, but when the world puts something around it, like they did with social media, a whole ecosystem, a whole infrastructure. I was talking to a video editing software startup in Jordan yesterday called Bith, B-I-T-H, and they're about 10 guys. They've raised less than $1 million, and they're competing with the, what seems to me like hundreds of like these captions type apps to do text over videos, right? But they're building it out of Jordan. It's looking good. One of the ones that we use is Veed.io, and they built one in the region, right? A SaaS platform, and they're getting subscribers, and it's working. And but because they changed their, so their website is still bith.tv, but all their social media and all their deck is bith.ai, and because they're in this AI space, it hasn't been successful yet. But you think they've got more chance of investment, and I hope they get it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I do want to say one thing about, and that's lovely, and I think Jordan is one of those places as well with a lot of potential. But what I love about this story is that Suleiman's father is actually was a Syrian-born taxi driver, and his mother is an English nurse. So
cool.
It's a British company, but it's just nice to see, you know, Arab immigrants kind of, you know, high up there. It's just,
very good.
Just nice to see, you know.
Anyways...
Stream us on smashy.tv or, which is apparently your guys' preferred method, listen to us as a podcast on Anghami, Spotify, or Apple Podcasts. And we'll see you tomorrow.
Apparently, yeah. Cool. And subscribe to the newsletter, Smashy Business Newsletter.
Thank you.